You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Hello and welcome to the Dr. Kristen Lierley Show. I'm your host, Dr. Kristen Lierley, and I'm here to tell you that the race for governor in Wisconsin is heating up. For the first time since 2010, this race is wide open, and everybody's favorite spicy grandpa, Tony Evers, is retiring, which means that the office of Wisconsin governor is really up for grabs. And for the first time in the state's 177-year history, we might finally elect a woman as governor. Four have entered the race thus far, including my guest today. She is not a career politician. She's actually an emergency department nurse, amazing, who worked with the CDC's Epidemic Intelligence Service, the EIS. She investigated disease outbreaks and she supported the public health safety net with her work. She's also a mom who flipped a hotly contested red assembly seat back in 2020. And you might know her as the Lieutenant Governor of Wisconsin, who has been one heartbeat away from the governorship for the last 3 years. And she's ready to close that gap. Sarah Rodriguez is here. Welcome, my friend.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
I am so excited to be here with you tonight because we go back. We have history.
We do. Yeah. All the way back to 2019, 2020 when we were running together.
Yes. We met in Madison when we were handing in our nomination papers to run for assembly. Yep. And all we knew was that you were a nurse and I was a doctor and we were just mad at the world.
Yep. Yeah. It was COVID and the Assembly and Senate hadn't met for 8 months. All this misinformation, disinformation was coming out of the Assembly and the Senate. And it was so frustrating to me that we couldn't come together in a moment when we needed leadership. And I think that's why you decided to get involved in politics. That's why I decided to get involved in politics, to say, you know, we can do better, right? We can have people who are healthcare providers, clinicians like you and me, to be able to do this. And it was so exciting to be able to meet you. And we've been fast friends ever since.
It's been, there aren't that many doctors and nurses and healthcare providers who actually run for office.
It's true.
Because we're so different. We're trained in evidence and data and proving what we talk about, which takes a long time. People don't have that kind of an attention span. So politics is all about getting your attention and saying the quick and easy thing. And marrying those two things is not all that common, but it's becoming more common because it has to be.
It is. I actually was just on a different training where it was all sorts of different physicians. They were all physicians except me, physicians and myself as a nurse who are now running for office. And more clinicians are standing up to do this. And I would say that one thing that clinicians do have is that we are able to explain really complicated things in a simple way. And we do that for our patients all the time. We make sure that we meet people where they're at and see kind of what they want to do. We provide them with choices. This is a treatment option. This is a treatment option. You know, here's your pros and cons. And then we listen and we say, okay, what are your worries? What are your concerns? And so I do think that that's a positive skill set to have in somebody who's going into politics.
Oh, totally. I feel like when I was campaigning, talking with future potential constituents was like talking to a patient in an exam room. Like, I want to hear what you have to say, and I want to be able to respond to what your concerns are. And I think that is like, that's what people think politicians and leaders do. It isn't necessarily what we're seeing in the real world, but I think it's what you're trying to do.
It is what I'm trying to do. And, you know, when I was in the Assembly, I flipped that district. It was a purple, probably a little light red district when I flipped it. And one of the things that I honestly loved doing was calling back constituents who didn't agree with me. So they would call, they'd leave a message, or they'd send me an email saying, you know, I don't want you to vote on this, or I'm very disappointed in your vote on that. And I would personally call them back because I wanted to make sure that people knew that I was going to be a representative for everyone. And so I would call and I would say, hey, you called me about this. Tell me what your concerns are. And I would listen. And then I would try to repeat it back to them. So we learned this, right, as clinicians, with here's what I heard you say. Mm-hmm. And then I would repeat it back to them. And then I would say, well, are you okay if I tell you where I'm coming from and why I made the decision that I made? And 90% of the time they said, okay. 10%, they were like, nope, that's good enough. I'm glad you listened to me. We're done. But at least at the end of that conversation, we understood where each other was coming from. And that was always my goal. And that's certainly my goal as governor now, is to be a governor for the entire state. And in fact, I'm going on a 72-county listening tour, going to every single county in the state to go there and listen to see what people's concerns are, because I just strongly believe you can't lead if you don't listen. And I want to be a governor for the entire state. And I want to make that clear right from the very beginning.
I definitely want to talk more about your tour and especially about healthcare. But first, I want to talk a little bit about way back in your life when you were working night shifts in the emergency department in Baltimore. And you spent time with the CDC investigating disease outbreaks. Yep. How did these really seminal experiences shape the way that you think about healthcare policy today?
So because I was able to do those things, because I worked bedside as a nurse within an emergency department, and this was a difficult time in Baltimore's history. There was an enormous heroin epidemic at the time, because this was quite a while ago. And it was pre-Affordable Care Act, where people didn't have access to coverage, didn't have access to insurance. So they came into my ER so sick, when they could have actually gotten the primary care that they needed, and they would never have needed to come into my ER. And what scares me now is Republicans are wanting to bring us back to that time. But when I think about health policy, because I've had these experiences, because I've done outbreak investigations nationally, internationally, I've sat by people's bedsides, I see people. I don't see policy. I don't see rhetoric. I see, you know, the grandmother who can't afford her medications. I see the individual who's on a high deductible plan who might be a diabetic and now can't afford their insulin. These are real people that, and this is going to be a big concern of us moving forward, particularly with what the federal government is doing with Medicaid, what they're doing with the cuts across the board. I'm very concerned about that. And it's one of the reasons why I'm running for governor, because I want to make sure that there's at least a little bit of a safety net in the state of Wisconsin. And if we have a Republican governor, that's simply not going to happen.
Right. I really want to emphasize, you mentioned this, when you were working as a nurse in the emergency department, you saw people who couldn't afford care, so they ended up in the emergency department. This is what we're looking at right now with the cuts to Medicaid, with the increases in premiums and the cuts to the ACA. Tell the people of Wisconsin what you anticipate is going to happen to all of us with the fallout from this lack of investment in our healthcare.
So it's very frustrating to me, because we had made such strides with the Affordable Care Act and getting people covered. We still had work to do. It's certainly not perfect. And I access healthcare myself, and I know it's not perfect. It's very frustrating. But we had made strides forward. And now what they're looking at with that big, ugly bill that they passed and the federal government, we're looking to go backwards. And what that means is, when people who are getting their insurance on the exchange, and we're talking about individuals who are small business owners, individuals who work for a small business and that doesn't, you are on the exchange. We're looking at premiums doubling for people, because they are getting rid of the subsidies on the exchange and the Affordable Care Act. That's really scary. So like a 60-year-old couple, you know, who's just getting by, is suddenly going to have an additional $1,500 to $2,000 that they're going to have to pay in their premiums. So here's what's going to happen. People are not, I just talked to somebody today, literally today on the phone, who is not going to get on the exchange this next year because it is too expensive.
Yes.
So that's going to raise costs for all of us. Even if you're on commercial insurance, even if you're on Medicare, you know, it's going to raise costs for all of us, because more of that care will be uncompensated. And that's what worries me. The other point I want to make on this is, with these Medicaid cuts, it is going to hit rural Wisconsin way more than it is going to hit suburban Wisconsin or urban Wisconsin. Our rural hospital systems are already hurting. And to have these cuts in Medicaid, that's just going to be disastrous.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more as someone who works in rural hospitals and takes mm-hmm. care of those people. Yeah, I do want to pivot to the CDC because you have worked for the CDC. And when I, as a physician, look at what's happening there under the leadership of RFK Jr., the dismantling of our public health infrastructure, all of the misinformation, all of the people who are fired, the leaders, the people who know what they're doing, I am profoundly concerned. What does this mean to you as somebody who has been there and who really understands what this means?
I worked for the CDC. I know many of these leaders. These are experts in their field. And they often get a lower salary working for the CDC. These are physicians, PhDs, a lower salary working for the CDC or the Department of Health and Human Services because they want to serve. They want to serve the community. They want to be able to serve the public. And to gut all of that intelligence, all of that, those individuals who have been leading for so many years in some of these areas. I mean, if we look at Milwaukee, when they had the lead paint crisis within the schools, they went to the CDC and they said, can you please give us some help? This is overwhelming our resources. That's exactly what the CDC is supposed to be for. And do you know what they came back and said? They had fired and let go all of their lead experts. So they didn't even have anybody to come and help Wisconsin with this crisis.
Weren't they in the middle of remediation? Like they were right in the middle of this project when all of a sudden everything just went away and they were like, what do we do now?
Right. Yeah. And just to leave people hanging, to not have that level of expertise is just very alarming to me. And the misinformation that's coming out of the CDC, I mean, we can talk about conspiracy theories all day. You're a physician, I'm a nurse. We can kind of cut through that and be able to see that what they're saying isn't true. Unfortunately, not everybody has our background. And we already have problems with people looking up stuff on the internet and finding some piece of information that we know isn't true. And as clinicians, we have to go over that with them and figure out what is good information to be able to access. And I've always said, go to the CDC. That's a great place. I can't say that anymore because you've got RFK Jr. linking random things like Tylenol and autism, which we know does not actually have a link. That is dangerous for people and people are going to be harmed.
It's so dangerous. And so many things that we've relied on as healthcare providers, mm-hmm. like the medical criteria for birth control pills, for sexually transmitted infection screening, all of that stuff was actually removed soon after he took over. So we've had to house it in different places. We need that information because these are complex cases. This information is constantly evolving. It's so worrisome, and there's so much work that we have to do. But before we get to all of the work, because we are going to talk more about healthcare and about your platform, just briefly, what did it feel like to flip a red assembly seat that nobody felt like could go to a Democrat in 2020?
Yeah, that was so exciting for me. And we weren't sort of part of the little group that they thought was going to flip. So it was a little bit of a surprise when I was able to flip that district. Only two of us flipped districts that year. And it's in a very gerrymandered state at the time. Now we're luckier. We have fairer maps in the state of Wisconsin. But it was really exciting to be able to do that, to be able to use my expertise within the assembly. It was really nice, especially during COVID.
Not really that much of a surprise, though, because of you, Lieutenant Governor Sarah Rodriguez, candidate for Wisconsin governor. We have to take a little bit of a break, but when we come back, can we please talk about healthcare?
Yes.
Yes. All right, let's do it. You are listening to the Dr. Kristen Lierley Show, streaming on the Civic Media app and broadcast all across Wisconsin on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Mm-hmm. Welcome back to the Dr. Kristen Lagerle Show. I'm Dr. Kristen Lagerle, and I'm talking with Wisconsin's Lieutenant Governor Sarah Rodriguez. She's running for the governorship in Wisconsin. And we talked a little bit in the last segment about her background with the CDC as a nurse. But there's one thing that really, really resonates with people across Wisconsin, and it's that nursing background. People love nurses. When Gallup polled people, nurses were easily the most popular trusted profession. Doctors were like way below that. Politicians were way below that. Yeah. Not surprising.
Yeah.
Yes. So, Sarah, you chaired Governor Evers' task force on the healthcare workforce.
I did.
And unsurprisingly, the final report highlighted that Wisconsin could face really severe shortages. And as an OBGYN doctor who works in rural parts of the country, I see this all the time in maternal care. What did you find about the root causes of this workforce crisis, and what solutions are actually feasible in a state like Wisconsin?
So there are so many things that we need to make sure that we're fixing in Wisconsin. And it's not just about graduating more nurses or more doctors, which we do need to do. And we actually had an OBGYN shortage even prior to when Roe fell.
Sure did.
And then it got worse after Roe fell, and we had that 1849 abortion law here in the state. I talked to residents, OBGYN residents, who were planning on staying in Wisconsin. And after that 1849 abortion law, they decided that it was not safe to practice. And they went to a different state where they could use their skills and to make sure that their patients were safe. So that's a real concern. And we talked about that within the task force as well. But one of the things is the affordability issue within the state. We've got young people who are leaving the state of Wisconsin. And so if you're thinking about that new graduate nurse, or you're thinking about, you know, folks who are ultrasound techs or radiology techs or surgical technicians, you know, they need to have affordable housing. They need to have affordable childcare. And that was a real issue for people to be able to live in the place where they're working. And so that was one of the things we talked about, was trying to incentivize like schools and businesses to be able to pay for people to go through these types of programs. But then how do we really look holistically at the entire state to say, but if you want them to be there, they got to be able to afford the rent, and they got to be able to put their children somewhere for childcare. And so those are some of those core issues that we talked
about. It's not just about producing more people to do the thing. You have to actually support the people. Is that what I hear you saying?
That is what you were hearing me say. Absolutely. And if we want them to go to rural spaces and we want to incentivize them to do that, then we're going to have an incentive program for them to be able to go there, because it's a challenge.
That's exactly what I was going to mention. Up in Oconto County, just north of where I am, I think 70% of people who are seeking childcare, check my numbers, but can't find it because it's just not there. They can't afford it. The childcare centers can't afford to function. This is a crisis. And if we want young families to be able to stay in Wisconsin and work in Wisconsin, we need to be able to provide this for them.
Yeah. And I think of it as infrastructure. I think of it like roads, buildings.
Yes. Yes.
There's infrastructure. And we need to have a plan to make sure that we can help families out for that, or they're not going to be able to work. And right now, the average cost of childcare for one child is $13,000 a year.
Wow.
And it's not like childcare providers are these wealthy people, right? They are barely scraping by themselves, making $12 to $15 an hour. I mean, that's not enough to be able to raise a family on. So the system is broken. And when a system is broken like that, but it is necessary for infrastructure and for the economy of Wisconsin, that's when I believe that the state government should come in to try to provide a solution.
Mm-hmm. That's the purpose of government, isn't it? To serve the people?
Yeah.
Access. Healthcare access is a growing problem, especially in rural communities. In your travels across the state, what are you hearing? And has anything surprised you, or has it just really like laid it down what you knew was already true?
I think I already knew it was going to be an issue. I guess I didn't know the extent of it, particularly in maternal care. So you're looking at some places where they have to travel an hour, hour and a half, 2 hours to be able to get to a hospital that actually delivers babies. Mm-hmm. That's a really long time To have to travel while in labor or try to figure out when you're going to be able to get there to be safe. And that makes people very nervous to live in rural spaces, especially young families. So what we see in some of these rural counties is that it's an aging county, that most of the young people are leaving, and that what you've got there are folks who are older who then need more health care.
Yes.
Yes. And so here we've got this kind of back and forth between not having the younger people to provide the health care and the people within the community not being able to access it because you don't have providers.
Providers, they can't travel, they struggle to be able to afford it, so many barriers. Right. And one thing that could reduce one of those barriers would be Medicaid expansion. This has been one of your favorite things. Talk to me about the work that you've done to expand Medicaid in Wisconsin.
So this is something that I authored when I was in the Assembly. It's something I still think we should do. We are one of 10 states that has not expanded Medicaid to cover additional people. These are single adults who are working. They just do not make enough money to be able to afford health insurance. I mean, many of them are uncovered today. Or if they're on the exchange, they're undercovered because their premium, their deductibles are so high, they barely use their health insurance. But one other thing I wanted to mention is we are one of two states that does not cover women postpartum for 12 months. Us in Arkansas. And Arkansas is working on it. So if you want to know why leadership matters, this is why leadership matters. We should be able to do this for families in our state.
We are abandoning new moms
Yes.
in their most vulnerable time and failing to provide them with literally life-saving health care.
I don't disagree. And to be clear, about 40% of babies nationally are born on Medicaid. That's almost half of our children. Their moms are not covered for that 12 months within the state of Wisconsin. That is something we got to figure out.
That's right. And this is just like all of healthcare, more prevalent in rural parts of the state. Mm-hmm. So I'm sure you are looking forward to your 72 county travels to hear more stories. And we are going to pick up with this conversation when we come back from this short break. Let's get into the meat of your campaign, the policy stuff, all the good campaign stuff. What do you say?
Sounds good.
All right. You are listening to the Dr. Kristen Lierley Show, broadcast all across Wisconsin on the Civic Media Radio Network. And you can also stream it on the Civic Media app. Welcome back to the Dr. Kristen Lierley Show. I'm Dr. Kristen Lierley, and I'm talking with Wisconsin's Lieutenant Governor, Sarah Rodriguez. She's running to be the governor of Wisconsin. And in our last segment, we talked a lot about healthcare, which we could talk about pretty much infinitely and every week and constantly because she's a nurse and I'm a doctor, and that's how we roll. So if you missed any of our conversation, you can always find it on Spotify, Apple, wherever you get your podcasts, and you can check out the video version on YouTube at Dr. Kristen Lierley. So Sarah, let's set aside healthcare for a moment.
Yes.
Let's talk about your spicy campaign launch because it was your 50th birthday, and there's something about your 50th birthday that like adds jet fuel to your life.
Yes. What a way to kick open the door to your 50s. Just announce for governor. That's what I was going to do.
Announce for governor and call the president of the United States a maniac in your launch video. That's gutsy. Yeah. What gave you the oomph to do that?
Well, here's the thing that I know and what I am hearing all across the state is people want somebody to fight for them. They want somebody to stand up for Wisconsin values. They want somebody to stand up for them and their families and what they're experiencing. They want them to tell them the truth. They want them to be pragmatic. Just get stuff done. And that is what I feel like I bring to this campaign for governor. I'm a nurse. Because I'm a nurse by background, I just want to be helpful. And I don't care where the ideas come from, but let's move forward. And the reality is that what President Trump has done and his administration and the leadership, the Republican leadership in Washington, is really a huge challenge for us. It is absolutely targeting our farmers. It is raising costs all across the state. And that's what I'm hearing from everybody.
And it's putting so much more of the onus back in the states, which makes the role of the governor that much more important, not just to govern in your state, but to govern outside of your state and to form coalitions with other like-minded governors. How do you do that? You are a state person. Where are your national credentials, Lieutenant Governor?
It's so frustrating that we can no longer rely on the federal government, that we're going to have to work together with the other states. And I can see that happening within the Midwest. We talked about this earlier about clinical guidelines. There's other states that are combining together to have standard clinical guidelines because they can't trust the CDC. And so that's what I want to make sure that I bring to this role is that experience within healthcare. But I've also been an executive within a large healthcare system, as well as a vice president within a Fortune 100 company. And I've been lieutenant governor for 3 years. So I have that executive experience to hit the ground running on day one. And it is really important now of who's going to be in that state position, because if we have a Republican in the governor's position in the state of Wisconsin, all that chaos you see in Washington, it's all going to trickle right down to Wisconsin.
That's right. And we have a really diverse group of people who are running on the Democratic side to be governor. Yes. We could very well have a female governor. You could be the first female governor in Wisconsin. Why has it taken so damn long for this to happen?
I don't know. And I would say, don't vote for me because I'm female. Vote for me because I'm the most qualified. And I think that I am. I mean, here I am. I have this clinical background. I've worked in private industry. I've had elected office. I speak Spanish. I can outreach to constituencies that we may not have outreached to before. And here's what I want to focus on as governor. And because it is so important, because I've visited all 72 counties every year that I've been lieutenant governor. And what I'm hearing from people is that they are doing everything right. They have a job, sometimes two jobs, and they are just feeling the squeeze. They cannot make ends meet. We talked about accessible, affordable healthcare. Well, let's talk about housing. Right now, the average age for somebody to buy a house for the first time is 40 years old.
Oh, wow.
That is insane to me that that's what's happening. And when I look across the state, we have just a lack of affordable housing. So one of the areas that I want to make sure that I'm working on is aligning our policy, our administrative rules of how you build housing, and our funding to make sure all three of those things align, and to prioritize home ownership. Because sometimes when we talk about affordable housing, in people's heads, it's putting up apartment buildings. Okay, we could also put up condos and people could actually get some equity out of that. And what we don't have in the state of Wisconsin are starter homes. We simply don't have them anymore. If you're looking at the average amount that people make, $45,000 to $50,000 a year, that what they can afford is around $100,000 to $150,000 home. That simply doesn't exist in the marketplace today. So that's something that we can come in the state to try to support. Let's talk about childcare. Goodness, $15,000 a year for childcare for one child, if you can find it, if you can find it, because so many times people are on wait lists and they're unable to even get off of a wait list. I've talked to parents who have gone back to work part-time, even though they wanted to go full-time, because they're trying to juggle a child. I talked to a healthcare system that couldn't recruit a physician to their facility because she tried to look for childcare and put herself on over 10 lists, wait lists, and the other ones she couldn't even put herself on the wait list because they weren't taking any more people.
Wow.
So she decided, like, this is not the place for me, right? So we need to treat that as infrastructure. There's a couple of states that are doing that, New Mexico and Vermont. New Mexico is fully funding it for everybody. Vermont is working with employers to make sure that we can have funding and subsidizing it up to very high levels, up to upper middle class. If you think about our public school system, we continually vote to raise our own property taxes to fund our school system. That formula is broken. And this is not to build a new building. This is not to have a new science lab. This is just to pay for teachers. And so we have got to make sure we are fully funding our public schools in the state of Wisconsin. Wisconsinites want us to do it, and we should respond to that. And last but absolutely not least, we have got to restore union bargaining rights in the state. And I will tell you that that will lift wages for all. Individuals should have a say in their pay, their benefits, the safety on the work site. People should be able to negotiate with their employer. And that's what I want to make sure as a priority for me as governor, that we reverse Act 10, which took away union bargaining rights, and make sure that that gets right into the hands of the people.
I hear you saying all these policy points, and I just have to mention that my son Abe is our producer. He's not on camera, but Abe was with me at the Capitol when the Act 10 protests were happening. And Abe is now a middle school music teacher. And I know for you, these are policy points. This is infrastructure. This is important, but it's also personal because you're a mom and you have kids like I do, and they have to live in the world. And if they can't afford it, that is our failure to provide that for them.
I do. My son is now, he'll be 19 on Thursday.
Hey, happy birthday.
I want him to raise a family here, stay here, build a life in Wisconsin. And he's not going to be able to do that if he can't afford it. And right now, I mean, rents in Wisconsin are higher than Texas, right? They're higher than Austin, Texas. It is unsustainable for us to continue to do this. We need more supply of housing, and we need to make sure that we are prioritizing home ownership. And that is something that I want to make sure that I do as a big priority for my administration, is to look at those things and truly make a real difference in people's lives.
And one way we can do that is by protecting reproductive rights. And I can't not bring that up because, you know, OBGYN, you're a nurse. So when you talked at the Democratic National Convention last year, you talked about abortion rights. Mm-hmm. You know that the 1849 law is still on the books here in the state. Even though we've pushed back on it, the Supreme Court has ruled it's still on the books. There are a number of different laws that are preventing people from getting fundamental health care. Correct. What is your plan for protecting reproductive health care in Wisconsin? This is going to be a big deal in the midterms and in our lives.
It absolutely is. And what I've always said is we should be enshrining Roe within the state of Wisconsin. That is something that we should do here, because people should be able to make the decision between themselves, their family, their faith leader, if they so choose, and their clinician. These are the only people who should be involved in that decision-making process. Politicians should have no part in the exam room. And so that's what I want to make sure I do as governor. And to be clear, Tom Tiffany, who is likely the Republican nominee, is extraordinarily extreme on abortion. We're talking absolute bans, no exceptions for rape or incest, you know, and we know what happens when we have abortion bans. We've seen that across the state of Wisconsin with just harrowing stories from women who have almost died because they have died across the country because they were unable to access care. And that is just something that I can't stand for.
So what will happen? Because we have new maps now in the legislature.
We do.
So there is a real possibility that we could have a Democratic trifecta come next January 27. What will be, those first 100 days are pivotal.
Yeah.
What will be your priorities during those first 100 days?
Yeah, I love this. But I also want to tell your listeners how close we are. So we just have to flip two seats in the Senate. That's it. And I think it's going to happen. I'll bet you a dollar on it. That's the only amount I bet.
Just a dollar?
The only amount I bet. But the assembly is a little harder, but it's doable. We got to keep the seats we have, flip five more. Four of them were within a percentage point when Trump was on the ballot. So when you're talking about it was within our grasp to be able to have a trifecta. It truly is within our grasp to have a trifecta. And so that's when we can really change leadership. So union bargaining rights is one of the number one things I'm going to have to restore. I think that it has gone too long in the state of Wisconsin. We started unions in Wisconsin, and to have us not have those types of rights is just unacceptable to me. So union bargaining rights is going to have to be one of those. Working on housing and childcare to actually make a real difference in people's lives is going to be a priority. Looking at the funding for school systems, public schools in the state of Wisconsin, I hear from people that their property taxes are so high, and it's because the state government is not providing the services that it should be providing and what Wisconsinites want us to provide. So making sure we make a demonstrable difference in people's pocketbooks is what is going to be my priority in the first 100 days.
Thank you for the reminder that we are the origin of collective bargaining here in the state of Wisconsin. Yes. We're a progressive state. Our history is all progressive until about 15 years ago.
Mm-hmm. It's true.
We can bring it back.
We can bring it back. We can bring back workers' rights. We can bring these things back. We can have a state that works for everybody. And we can have an economically booming state. We can have all of those things at the same time.
So you, as Lieutenant Governor, have worked really closely with Governor Evers for mm-hmm. 3 years. What is the most important thing that you've learned from him, and where would you chart a different course?
That's a great question. He has done such an amazing job in the face of a legislature that has been hostile. And so I have learned how he's navigated that and how he's been able to work around a hostile legislator to get some of his priorities done. And I will absolutely channel some of that within when I'm governor. But I think we will govern a little differently because we have different experiences. I'm also willing to use the bully pulpit of that governor, of the governor's office, to say, okay, here's what we're planning on doing. Here's where it's stopping. So Representative Smith in this district is not voting to fully fund your public school. So when you go back, you know, when you go back, you're going to have to make sure you make a good choice next time and who's going to represent you.
Will you bust out a swear every once in a while like he does?
Very rarely, because I channel my mother. My 80-year-old mother lives with me, and she thought bored was a swear in my house. You couldn't say you were bored like that literally. Like, she said stuff like jiminy crickets and 30-
But she also taught you about 6'7", so she
yeah, I know.
Hey, friends, I'm talking with Lieutenant Governor Sarah Rodriguez. She's running for Wisconsin governor. We have to take a little break, but when we come back, we're going to wrap it up with some fun. So stay tuned. This is the Dr. Kristen Lierley Show.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Welcome back to the Dr. Kristen Lierley Show. I'm Dr. Kristen Lierley here with Wisconsin's Lieutenant Governor Sarah Rodriguez. She's running to be the governor. And we've talked about her backstory, healthcare, her platform. So let's just have some fun. But before we get to it, I want advice from you, Sarah.
Oh, goodness.
Because we are both healthcare providers. Mm-hmm. We both, when we got into this, were frustrated with what was happening in the political world, so we decided to take the plunge. What would you say to a fellow healthcare provider, a nurse, a public health official, a physician, somebody who's listening right now and they're thinking, maybe I should, I don't know?
Do it. I mean, honestly, we need different voices around the table, and particularly healthcare voices. Because we know it from the inside, we know how complicated it is, and we know how broken it is. And so being able to provide that perspective, I did it in the assembly, I did it as Lieutenant Governor, to be able to have those conversations with healthcare providers and others who are trying to access healthcare and they can't. And you could run at any level. You could run on your local school board. There was a physician that ran on one of the local school boards during COVID. And he was such a respected physician that they didn't have the type of issues that other school boards did around masking, around mitigation on COVID, because he was able to lend a voice that had power and support within the community. So they didn't have some of those partisan fights at the end of the day. So think about being able to lend your expertise on so many different levels.
So many different ways to lend your expertise. So much misinformation to debunk, so much trust to build. I'm sure that as you are looking at your future as Wisconsin governor, you're thinking about the past and the legacy that you're building on. If you could have lunch with any prior governor of Wisconsin, who would it be and what would you talk about?
Fighting La Follette.
We're going to go with Bob.
Fighting Bob La Follette. Yes, I think that would be fun because he was just such a champion for Wisconsin. And I think that would be something that I would love to hear from him, to see kind of what it was like and to be able to champion those values.
I also would love to have lunch with Fighting Bob La Follette, although I feel like he would probably spend most of the lunchtime going over his speeches. And it wouldn't be as entertaining as I would think it would be. He was a great orator.
Right. Yeah.
Okay. Here's the big question. Are you ready? Here's the wind up. You have to convince somebody to move to Wisconsin, your home state where you were born and raised. But you only have three things: a place, a food, and an activity. What do you choose?
Okay.
A place, food, and an activity.
Okay. Uh-huh. I think, honestly, Milwaukee is a hidden jewel. It has so many different things that you can do. It's fantastic. A food has to be cheese curds because they're amazing and you got to dip them in something like ranch. They're really, really good. And then an activity, we have the Ice Age Trail in Wisconsin, and I love to go hiking and backpacking, and it is beautiful to be able to do all of this outdoor stuff in Wisconsin.
There is so much to do in Wisconsin, and it starts actually up in Door County. Well, where does it start, in the west or the east?
It goes all the way through. It's like 1,100, 1,200 miles, so it goes all the way through. It goes both. It goes from west all the way through, so you can hike the entire state.
It follows the glacier.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really, really cool.
Yeah, I love it too. Mm-hmm. Okay, here's my last question for you. In January 2027, when you're being sworn in as governor, what is that first thing? You talked about your priorities. You talked about the first 100 days. But what is that crowning jewel that you want to accomplish? And what does Wisconsin look like in 4 years under your leadership?
So the one thing that I want to make sure that I accomplish is making sure that childcare is affordable for everybody. This is something that I hear consistently, and we know the system's broken. And so if we can put sustainable progress in place to make sure childcare is affordable, that we are able to subsidize it all the way up to anybody who might need it, that is something that A, would put an enormous amount of dollars back in people's pocketbooks, which will support the economy. So that would be something that I would love to be able to do. In terms of at the end of 4 years, I'm hoping that we have a government that works well, that people can access easily, that we have streamlined services so that there is only one door you have to go through to get all the services that you need, and that we've rebuilt a state workforce, and that we continue to try to build on that, that we practice what we preach. So even if we can't reverse Act 10, we can still put in those labor management practices. We can still talk to everyday frontline workers, make sure we're doing the right thing for people.
I hear you saying infrastructure. I hear you saying supporting people and making sure that we have a livable place where they can afford to live.
Right.
I hear you saying that there's vision for the future in Sarah Rodriguez's Sarah for Wisconsin's campaign.
Yep. Thank you so much.
Hey, listen, how can people get involved with your campaign? Yeah. Where can they find you? What platforms? What's your website?
I'm on all of the things, all of the social media. You and I are both Gen X, so I know we have a complicated relationship with social media, but we do it because we're required. So I'm on all the things, but if you go to my website, sarafowi.com, or just Google Sarah Rodriguez in Wisconsin, you'll find me. You can volunteer, sign up to volunteer. We're already having people coming out to make phone calls. You can donate if you're able and you so choose. That's one way that I can get my message out there, is to be able to pay for things like signs and pay for things like little pamphlets and mailers and that kind of stuff. So I would just love for people to check out my website, check out my video that I made. I think it'll give you an idea of the type of governor that I'm going to be. And I would just welcome any support that I can get.
Sarah, Madam Lieutenant Governor, thank you so much for hanging out with me today.
Well, thank you for having me.
Always. Mm-hmm. Friends, if you missed any part of our conversation, you can always find it on Spotify, Apple, and wherever you get your podcasts. And you can check out the video version on YouTube at Dr. Kristen Lyerly. You can also find me at Dr. Kristen Lyerly on all the socials. So please drop me a line and let me know what you think. Many thanks to Abraham Lyerly, our producer, and Nick Tierman for our theme song. And until next week, stay engaged, get informed, and be healthy.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.